fires, reduce sugar and white simple carbohydrates. Focus on real food. The 80-20 rule. Because of my autoimmune disease, I'll discuss this in more detail later, I feel my absolute best when I'm eating clean. For me, that means meats, poultry, beef, and seafood, fruits, non-starchy vegetables, nuts and seeds, and natural oils, olive oil, palm oil. I don't eat a lot of grains, dairy, beans, refined sugar, or processed oils like canola oil, vegetable oil, or soybean oil. This is 80% of my food intake. The other 20% is whatever I want. I didn't come by this mathematically. How I eat boils down to, how do I feel? For example, last week, I ate probably more 60-40, and I can tell that I'm feeling tired and sluggish now because of it. This week, I'm back on track and feeling much better because of it. The question you're going to ask is, why not clean 100% of the time? I know that if I did that, I would feel absolutely fantastic. But I also know that if I go down that road, I'm going to go crazy. Trying to eat perfectly is what made me obsessed with dieting. That's something you have to avoid. Eating 20% non-clean foods is enough that I don't feel deprived and not so much that my body is suffering because of it. I am against diets that deprive you of food because they leave you feeling overwhelmed. A 2011 New York Times study on decision fatigue discovered that prisoners who appeared before a particular parole board in the morning received parole 70% of the time. In the afternoon, that number dropped to 10%. I think the decision makers on that parole board heard one excuse after another and just got tired. It's what's called decision fatigue. We as human beings get overwhelmed when we have too much information coming at us. There's no truer instance than when you're searching for the right diet. One book says, food A leads to cancer and you should never eat it under any circumstances, but eat lots of food B. However, the second book tears down food B and champions food A as the most healthful food in the world. Does that sound familiar? Instead of driving myself crazy with diets that change with the direction of the wind, I decided to focus on eating whole foods and as few chemicals as possible. I didn't ban the foods that I liked. I just made it my mission to find a way to satisfy my cravings without taking a trip to Chemical City. Chemical City. Chemical City is a phrase I use around my home to describe foods that I think are loaded with chemicals and are way unhealthy for you. If my son asks for something that I think crosses that line, my response is, no way, that's Chemical City. These are the foods I actively avoid. Let's take a look at your average coffee creamer, for example. Coffee creamer. The coffee creamer you have in your refrigerator or cabinet could be full of corn syrup solids and something called diglycerides. Diglycerides alone can contain trans fats, even if the nutrition label says there are no trans fats. Instead of coffee creamer, I'll use coconut milk if I absolutely need something extra in my coffee. If I want a boost of energy, I'll have a green tea instead of an energy drink. Some of the ingredients found in energy drinks include sucralose and acesulfame, potassium. Green juice is a much healthier option. I make mine with spinach, celery, kale, lemon, cucumber, and ginger. A little side note about green juice. I think it's great. If you're someone who doesn't like it, just give it a chance. Green juice replenishes you with vital nutrients and vitamins and counteracts cravings. I use a Breville brand juicer for my green juice. It's the masticating juicer, which is the most efficient kind. The other most popular option is a centrifugal juicer. This type of juicer is usually cheaper but not as effective at extracting all of the nutrients you want from fruits and vegetables. Now, I think this goes without saying, but when I'm talking about juice in this section, I am not referring to pasteurized juices you can buy from the store. Another drink to mention when discussing chemicals is wine. We discuss wine in detail in this book, but in short, I'm not against it if you can find an organic wine. If I drink 2 glasses of wine with chemicals, I feel terrible the next day. The number one chemical you can find in wine is sulfur dioxide. It can cause migraine headaches, skin irritations, breathing problems, and more. On top of that, wine has a lot of added sugar, and pesticides are sprayed all over the grapes before they're pressed. The workers who spray pesticides wear protective clothing like hazmat suits. Shouldn't that be a major red flag? If you drink organic red wine, you can avoid the pesticides. Visit chantelrayway.com/wine to see what brands of wine, and to see some of the other products I love with no chemicals, go to chantelrayway.com/things-i-love-2. On the topic of alcohol, I need to state that I am personally anti-beer. Besides the fact that I can't stand the taste, beer is full of chemicals. Most beers are filled with high fructose corn syrups, a lot of artificial flavors, and carrageenan.
1 Corinthians 6:19 through 20, NIV. Do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have received from God? You are not your own. You were bought at a price. Therefore, honor God with your bodies.
In whatever you eat, remember that your body is a temple. If it's a temple, why would you put chemicals in it? Artificial sweeteners and preservatives. I'm big on not drinking my calories, but I have a ton of super thin friends who do. For them, it comes mostly from wines and mixed drinks. If you keep it in your eating window, that's fine. However, I recommend staying far, far away from sodas. If you take 10 teaspoons of sugar and lay it on a table, you're looking at the amount of sugar in a 12-ounce can of soda. That's ridiculous. On top of that, it's not even real sugar. You're drinking something called high fructose corn syrup. It's a chemical derivative of corn syrup, and you can find it in bread, yogurt, crackers, cookies, and more. High fructose corn syrup is not real sugar. It's basically just straight chemicals. Now, I'm not anti-sugar. I just recommend real sugar. Raw sugar, raw honey, coconut sugar, dates, and maple sugar are all great options, but I avoid high fructose corn syrups like the plague. If you're on the lookout for artificial sweeteners, check the backs of the packaging on the foods you eat and look for these kind of ingredients: aspartame, saccharin, sucralose, acesulfame potassium. I prefer that you use real sugar rather than these ingredients or any artificial sugars. As an alternative to sugar, I believe stevia leaf or powder is okay. There are also preservatives to look out for. For this reason, I try to eat very little packaged food. I prefer fresh foods as opposed to anything canned, jarred, or boxed. If I'm eating corn, I want corn on the cob instead of corn from a can. Another chemical I'm really against is dimethylpolysiloxane. Yes, that's a long word and is probably present in a lot of the foods you eat. It's a type of silicone with anti-foaming properties that's used in a wide variety of products, including Silly Putty. Unfortunately, you can find it in mashed potatoes and most fast food chicken sandwiches and french fries. Azodicarbonamide, also called the yoga mat compound, can be found in commercially baked bread. It's in almost 500 food products. As you could guess from the nickname, it's used in yoga mats and it's added to bread to maintain texture. It's an unnecessary chemical. You even have to watch out for the healthy foods. You can find a chemical called carrageenan in almond milk. It's basically a thickener that keeps liquids from separating. It's allowed in organic foods, and it's been linked to colon cancer, IBS, and gastrointestinal problems. I've started making my own almond milk because I haven't found anything that doesn't have loads of chemicals in it. Just about everyone knows about MSG, or monosodium glutamate. It's in everything from restaurant foods to chips and frozen dinners. If I look at a food label and I don't know what one of the ingredients is, then that's something I'm going to try to keep out of my diet. Take a look at the nutrition labels on the foods you eat every day and see what you find. Here are a few common foods and snacks and the suspicious ingredients you can find in them. It's eye-opening what you'll discover from a quick web search. Honey, wheat, and rich bread. Contains dough conditioners including diglycerides, monoglycerides, and sodium stearolactate. Deli turkey breast. Contains carrageenan. Cheese-flavored nachos. Contains MSG, corn syrup solids, and artificial colors like yellow 6 or red 40. Cereal bars. Contain high fructose corn syrup. Diet colas. Contain sucralose and acesulfame potassium. Frozen dinners. Contain maltodextrin. Non-fat Greek yogurt. Contains sucralose and acesulfame potassium. Let's talk about dairy for a second. I do love dairy, but only when it's clean dairy. Most dairy products are filled with so many chemicals and hormones. I just don't feel good when I eat them. Most of the time, I don't eat much dairy at all, and that's hard since I love ranch dressing. If you're drinking milk, go for raw dairy from a cow. On the topic of raw milk, I know that certain states have made it illegal, which I think is ridiculous. Virginia, Maryland, New Jersey, West Virginia, North Carolina, Ohio, and Tennessee are just a few. I'm not telling you to do anything illegal. But if you can't drink raw milk, it might not be a good idea to have it at all. Use homemade almond or cashew milk for coffee. It's not hard. I recommend using a 2-to-1 ratio of water to nuts to make sure it's thick enough. Again, there's nothing wrong with dairy if your body can process it. My body struggles with it, but if there's a day that I really want a bowl of nachos, I'll have it. Use the 3-bite rule. When you cut out entire food groups and limit the number of calories you consume, you have to rely on your willpower to succeed. At some point, your willpower kind of gives up. Anytime I go the route of completely banning a particular food from my life, I go crazy and I start losing my willpower. One day I just explode and eat everything in sight. But when I have one or two bites of decadent foods, I can say, okay, I had it, it was fine, the end. It makes me feel like I can still have what I want. I've discovered that the magic number for me to have the decadent foods I want is 3 bites, 2 times a day. Eating 3 bites of dessert doesn't make my body respond negatively. This is something I can do and maintain my weight. If I'm aiming to lose weight, then I might do this once a day or even not at all. However, I never ban myself from eating any particular food. That behavior leads to a binge somewhere down the road. Allowing myself 3 small bites satisfies the craving. Once again, if you don't have physical ailments, you can eat whatever your body craves. I have tons of skinny friends who eat whatever they want all the time. But because they fast, they still maintain and lose weight. I have one particular friend that weighs 100 pounds and drinks 1 to 2 sodas a day. She's an intermittent faster and only eats OMAD. This proves that the amount of food you eat is the most important factor in your weight loss. You can overeat on any diet and still be overweight. Too clean. On average, I would say most thin eaters I interviewed eat clean about 70 to 80% of the time because their bodies naturally craved clean foods. However, I want to talk a bit about whether you are healthy or sick. Most of the people I talked to are very healthy, but the people I talked to who said they ate clean 90 to 100% of the time were all sick with some sort of autoimmune or thyroid disease, and they said they felt terrible when they ate something not good for them. They combated the issue of feeling deprived because of feeling awful when they ate it. It's important to understand that there is a healthy thin and a sick thin. Don't try to overdo it by eating 100% clean all the time. It can lead you to obsessiveness, false senses of security, and then you're buckling and eating foods you crave outside of your eating window. Give yourself room to enjoy your food. I interviewed 40 women specifically to see how often they ate clean. Now I know what you're thinking. You're looking at the chart I made and asking how I got to 80%. The chart is just based on those 40 women, but in general, the average for all thin eaters I interviewed came out to be about 80% clean eating and 20% unclean eating. A lot of dieters have blacklisted certain foods with the belief that, if they eat them, they won't lose weight. In my experience, trying to eat super clean prevented me from losing weight. What happened was that I ate perfectly Monday through Friday, but when the weekend came along, I completely lost it after depriving myself all week long. Instead, I suggest writing in a food diary the things you eat. People who track their food in a journal lose more weight than those who don't. It's not something you have to do forever, but it's a good idea when you start. Red light, yellow light, green light food. What I'm saying is that you can eat whatever you want, but you must create a list for yourself that asks, how do I feel when I eat these foods? No one is ever telling you that you cannot eat something. You can eat whatever you want. However, I have learned that for me personally and for about 10% of the people, I must be very careful about what I eat because I have an autoimmune disease to consider. If you don't have any issues and are healthy, then you should follow the principles of the thin people who I interviewed and eat whatever you want, and you should not deprive yourself. Now, if you're sick like me, then you have to be discerning in what foods you put into your body because if you eat these foods, you will feel so terrible that it's just not worth it. The difference is that I make substitutions. If my body wants a cookie, I eat it. But I eat it with the foods that my body likes. I'll make myself a cake or buy a cake with all the ingredients my body loves so I'm not depriving myself. When I want cake, I eat cake. When I want a cookie, I eat a cookie. When I want a chip, I eat a chip. I am changing what I'm eating only for one reason, and it's not because I'm on a diet, and it's not that I can't have those foods. It's because of my gut and because of food allergies, sensitivities, and the way my body responds. So I must make discerning decisions, not deprivations. For 90% of people, everything is a green light food. We only need red lights if we have some kind of food allergy or sensitivity. Here are the things I don't feel good eating. Gluten. Gluten is in wheat, rye, barley. It is not in things like quinoa, rice, millet, or oats. Most oats are not considered gluten-free because they are processed in factories that have tons of gluten products. So you want to be careful and make sure they are gluten-free. Legumes. Peas, red beans, black beans, kidney beans, white beans, lentils, chickpeas. Green beans. Grains, some. Corn. Oats. Whole wheat. Rice. Brown, white, wild. Dairy. Milk, cheese, yogurt, ice cream. The American diet is based so much on grains, gluten, and dairy. A typical breakfast is a piece of whole wheat toast, a low-fat Greek yogurt and granola, or a bowl of Cheerios or shredded wheat. Dinner often consists of white rice, mac and cheese, and a steak. I'm not telling you to cut out any food groups at all, but I believe everyone needs to create a personalized list of what we all call red light foods, yellow light foods, and green light foods. For me, here are some of the red light foods that I cannot have. Red light foods. Gluten, bread, pasta. Dairy, soy milk. Yellow light foods, quinoa, corn, white rice, white potatoes, goat's milk cheese. Green light foods, fruits, lean meats, non-starchy vegetables. Cooling foods after cooking increases their resistant starch. When I eat white rice, especially if I cook it and then the next day cool it, I do not feel bad. If I have a couple of corn chips, I'm not going to feel terrible. Starches are made of long chains of glucose and are in all kinds of grains like potatoes, corn, and beans. For whatever reason, starch doesn't do as well when it passes through your large intestine. So when I eat rice, I cook it, then cool it, and then warm it up again. Same thing with potatoes. For whatever reason, potatoes digest through my body so much better after they are cooled, and then I can eat them. Seems strange, but it's true. I read an article online at www.healthline.com called Cooling Some Foods After Cooking Increases Their Resistant Starch. There have been many debates about whether potatoes are healthful or not, as they are a popular starch used in many diets around the world. While higher potato consumption has been associated with an increased risk of diabetes, this could be caused by processed forms like French fries rather than baked or boiled potatoes. How potatoes are prepared impacts their effects on health. For example, cooling potatoes after cooking can substantially increase their amount of resistant starch. One study found that cooling potatoes overnight after cooking tripled their resistant starch content. If I want a chocolate smoothie, I'll make it with fresh cocoa powder and frozen bananas, so I'll satisfy my craving of a chocolate milkshake by making a version that's cleaner for me. Again, this is just my list of the foods I eat, limit, or avoid. You have to discern for yourself which foods are your own red lights, yellow lights, or green lights. Drinking calories. I notice that I don't lose weight when I drink my calories. I have to even be careful with juice because there are calories in that too. The rare times that I drink alcohol, I drink it with zero calorie mixers like diet tonic and soda water. With wine, I only suggest low sugar organic wines without a ton of preservatives. Keep in mind that all of this still has to happen in your eating window. A lot of people think skipping meals and getting a smoothie instead is better for them, but some smoothies can have up to 880 calories and up to 132 grams of sugar. That's like eating six Snicker bars. The point is, just because the calories are in a drink doesn't mean they don't count. Not too much sugar.
Proverbs 25:27 NLT. It's not good enough to eat too much honey, and it's not good to seek honors for yourself.
Now we'll tackle the topic of sugar in more detail so you can understand the importance of avoiding too much sugar in your diet. Sugar burning versus fat burning. It's very important that you understand the two modes your body can be in at any given time, fat burning or sugar burning. You have to be in fat burning state to lose weight. The ultimate goal is to create a system of eating where you're consistently in a fat burning state without cutting all sugar out of your diet. As soon as you eat food, the storage hormone called insulin starts to rise. It signals the cells in your body to absorb glucose. When we stop eating, insulin levels fall, and after so many hours of fasting, we use up all the sugar and switch over to fat for fuel burning. This is similar to why you don't have to eat while you're asleep. Your body is using stored energy to survive. Think of a hybrid car. Some hybrids use only electricity for fuel until there's none left. At that point, it switches over to gas consumption to keep going. That is what it's like in the human body. You want to use up all that sugar and get to the fat because burning fat results in weight loss. Your body won't bother going to fat stores for fuel when there's plenty of sugar present. When you start your fast, your body is burning only sugar at first. After 18 to 24 hours, those stores start to run out, so your body is forced to get energy from your fat. That's the key. Now you know why low-carb, high-fat diets work so well. There's less sugar for your body to pull from when you're eating that way. Like all diets, though, it's hard to sustain, so we want to find a way to have balance. Blood sugar. An ideal blood sugar level is between 80 to 100 while you're fasting. That's when I feel best while fasting. If I'm starting to fall into a slump, I use exercise or caffeine to perk me up. Since you shouldn't be consuming calories during your fasting window, you can drink unsweetened tea or black coffee to get your caffeine. Your body gets its fuel from three kinds of food: carbohydrates, proteins, and fats. Carbohydrates, or carbs, come from breads, fruits, vegetables, and more. Fat and protein come from meat, dairy, nuts, and fatty vegetables like avocados. Your digestive system breaks down each food and basically sends it to your digestive tract. Your body uses insulin to process the sugar from the carbs you eat. So the amount of insulin your body creates really depends on how much sugar you're taking in. When you hear the word sugar, you might be visualizing table sugar, but sugar also comes from the breakdown of carbs. When I eat a meal that's high in sugar, I immediately crave a snack afterwards. It's not that I'm still hungry. I just feel the need for something sweet. This is because the high sugar meal I ate caused my blood sugar to shoot up. So when the blood sugar drops even just a little, I start craving something sweet to balance me out. This is a major reason to avoid eating too much processed sugar. Glycemic index glycemic load. A lot of the diets you've tried before push the rule of restricting carbs to lose weight, but not all carbs are created equal. 50 grams of carbs from bread and 50 grams of carbs from broccoli don't release the same amount of sugar into your bloodstream. These differences in foods can be determined by the glycemic index or glycemic load of a particular food. There is a difference between these two terms, but they both are used to determine what effect the food you eat has on your blood sugar. Should you spend a lot of time obsessing over the glycemic load of the foods you eat? No, not at all. I don't think there are thin people out there calculating the glycemic load of 2 cups of spaghetti versus a corn on the cob. That sort of stressful calculation will drive you crazy, just like dieting. That being said, I do think you should be conscious of the amount of sugar you're eating. All of the thin eaters I talked to really watched the amount of processed sugar they consumed. I consciously keep 80% of my meals full of foods that don't drastically raise my blood sugar. It's not hard to see that an apple isn't going to raise your blood sugar the same way a donut will, right? Keep your blood sugar under control or it's going to make you want to keep eating more. I'm stuck in my weight loss. A lot of people have said to me, "Don't you think with these skinny girls you interviewed, it's just their metabolism?" I do think that is the case with a few people. As I've spent time with these thin eaters, I realize that people see them eat this huge lunch, but they're only seeing part of the picture. What they don't realize is, yes, these women have that big lunch, but guess what? They didn't eat dinner. If you were to eat with them, you might think, wow, look how much they eat for lunch. But you don't see the entire picture of everything else they've eaten or not eaten. As I interviewed all these women, one of the questions I asked them was, what is your limit on the scale? In other words, when do you start saying, okay, I need to start cutting back? For most of them, their range was somewhere between 3 to 5 pounds. Some got on the scale every day. Most got on once a week, and some just gauged how their clothes fit. I also asked, if your clothes are feeling a little tighter or you've gained 3 to 5 pounds on the scale, what is your next move? Remember, the majority of women I interviewed had never read a diet book in their lives. They never needed to read a diet book because they never wanted or needed to go on a diet. The number one answer I got was, I need to cut back on sugar. Some people would say, I would cut my portion sizes even smaller. Others would say, I cut back a little on my carbs and sugar. Then I would ask, are you going to cut out all sugar or just cut back on sugar? Most would say, I'm going to significantly cut back. When these ladies were gaining weight, they would switch from eating twice a day all week long to OMAD at least twice in a week. For example, here is an excerpt from the interview with my friend Missy. Chantel, how often do you get on the scale? Missy, not often. Once a week or every other week, I can tell when I look at myself. Chantel, so you can tell just by looking at yourself in the mirror or by how your clothes are fitting? Missy, yes, the clothes tell me, or I can just look in the mirror and can see if I'm 112 pounds, 115 pounds, 117 pounds. Chantel, what are the top 3 things you would do to lose weight? Missy, I felt like I needed to lose some weight recently, and I needed to cut back on alcohol. I added more leafy greens to my diet, and I cut down on pasta and heavy carbs. Chantel, what about sugar? Missy, I don't cut back on sugar. Wine is the most sugary thing I have. I don't eat a lot of sugar. Chantel, do you cut portion sizes? Missy, I do try to eat a bigger late lunch and a very light dinner. I try not to eat late at night. If I do have dessert, I eat like a little cup of dark chocolate chips from the freezer. Chantel, would that be your total sugar for the day? Missy, other than wine, yes. The creamer for my coffee has sugar. I'm not a huge sweets person. I'd rather have nachos. If you put a plate of cake in front of me or nachos, I'd rather eat the nachos. I think it's just the different tastes people have. Chantel, how often would you say you have sugar? Every night? Every other night? Missy, when I want it. Not every night. If I crave a sweet, maybe 3 out of 7 nights, I'll have a little bit of dessert, which would be like 10 chocolate-covered peanuts, or 10 chocolate-covered raisins, or dark chocolate chips that I get from the freezer. The freezer makes them last longer and taste better. You can savor it more than if it's room temperature. I like all my chocolate frozen. Chantel, so you're saying that normally you do a small lunch and medium dinner? Missy, yes, but I'm trying to flip-flop that. If I'm trying to lose weight, I'll do a medium lunch and small dinner. Yesterday I woke up and had my orange juice and coffee, and then I was busy all day. So I had a wrap with maybe a cup of arugula, ranch, sriracha, and tuna. I think the tuna was 500 calories. But I wasn't even hungry at dinner after that. I did have dinner because that wasn't enough calories for me. And I had sriracha ranch cucumbers, veggie nuggets, and a glass of wine before bed. That's my wind down. Chantel, any other tips? Missy, savor your food, get a good night's sleep, and make yourself work out, even if it's just 15 minutes. Convince yourself to do it. Right now, I'm at the gym, so I won't walk the dog today. But the other day, I ran for 15 minutes and took the dog for a walk. Just get active, even if it's just 10 minutes. Don't overcommit. Just fit it in where you can. It's a momentum thing. Personally, I have a very big sweet tooth. I really love sweets. So I have to be very careful about what I do with sugar. Before I started doing intermittent fasting, I was pre-diabetic. I have seen people who are pre-diabetic or type 2 diabetic do my program, and the intermittent fasting helped their condition. If somebody is pre-diabetic or has type 2 diabetes, there's a fairly standard marker that is called the A1C. That is the 3-month average of your blood. You can go to your general practitioner or chantelrayway.com/bloodwork and get an A1C blood work test done to see how your blood sugar is doing. My blood sugar now is perfectly stable, but I did buy a blood glucose monitor from a local drugstore. Occasionally, I like to check my blood sugar levels before I eat. After I eat, I check it again, and then again 2 hours later. A lot of people will say, I don't know if this will spike my insulin, or is this going to get me out of ketosis? One thing I do is take my blood sugar before I've had a cup of coffee with MCT oil and coconut. Before drinking my coffee, my blood sugar is usually around 85, and it immediately goes down after I drink it. Sometimes it goes down 10 points. Go to chantelrayway.com/hacks for other hacks and to learn some of the other things I do to substitute sugar and lower my insulin levels.